There you go.
Okay, I'm gonna call the, what meeting is this? This is the Boulder Planning Commission for September 19th to order. And let's do roll call. Start down there with you, Colleen.
Colleen Thompson here.
Elena Hughes.
Darrell Fuller.
Nancy Tosta.
Tina Carlson.
And we also have present Jessica LaFever, our town clerk, and Lacey Allen, our deputy town clerk. I didn't see if Erin was up there. I think she is planning to join us, but she said she wouldn't be here in person. Okay. Can I have a motion to approve the agenda?
I make a motion to approve the agenda. This is Tina.
Is there a second?
Seconded, Elena.
Any discussion? All those in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? All right, we have an agenda. Any conflicts of interest in our agenda topics we have? All right. We have lots of meeting minutes. I did read through them. I know Tina read through at least some of them. Elena read through them. I did make a few minor changes just to clarify. And Lacey also replaced the July 25th meetings, which were just the town council discussion, with the full joint meeting discussion. Yeah, so she replaced it at about 4 o'clock, I think. So, I did read through it, but if anybody else wants to take a look at it, you can, obviously. So let's go through this meeting by meeting, I guess. How about July 11th? Anybody have any comments on the additional comments on the July 11th?
Unless it's been changed, this is Tina. I think it's incomplete. There's the ending of it doesn't, it's just a highlighted, but it might be complete at this time. Yeah. I don't know.
So Lacey did respond and said that there was a problem that it recording cut off after 1 hour.
Okay.
And so we don't have those final items to write minutes on.
Yeah. I will say that I did go back in and I wrote the end there, when it ended and what timestamp it ended on, and that we, so just to, so it wasn't confusing to people reading the minutes. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Yeah. So I think she wrote something along the lines of recording stopped at minutes this.
Perfect.
Rest of the meeting failed, or recording failed.
Okay.
And here's Erin.
Okay.
I make a motion.
I'm on
to
the meeting again.
Muted.
I'll make a motion to approve the August 9th, 8th minutes, is it?
Right, July 11th.
July 11th, sorry. July 11th meeting as
corrected.
Corrected.
Is there a second?
I'll second that, Colleen.
Any further discussion on those minutes?
I just wasn't there, so I'll abstain.
Okay, all in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
4 ayes and 1 abstention. July 25th, special joint meeting. Anybody want to move to approve those?
Was that on the 25th?
The 25th, July 25th.
I'll make a motion to approve the July 25th meetings. Meeting minutes.
I'll second that, Colleen Thompson.
Any discussion on those minutes? All in favor, say aye.
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 Aye. And I'm abstaining.
And an abstention from Tina. Aye. I place it on. 4 ayes and 1 abstention. The August 8th regular meeting. Any
I made some comments there. I assume they were.
They were updated.
Okay.
Is that the one where you commented on land use versus open space? It was like the
general. Yeah, it was confusion on what exactly
she changed. It.
Okay, great.
Yeah, because we were talking about
okay,
you know, open space. I reinforced your comment. I said
okay.
I agree with Tina.
Okay,
and Lisa did make the change. So any, is there a motion?
Yeah.
I already got a motion on this.
Yeah.
Okay. Any further discussion on the August 8th meeting minutes?
Wait. Lacey, do you have a motion for the August 8th minutes?
No.
Mm-mm.
Oh.
Okay. Sorry, I know there's been a lot. There's no motion. Sorry.
Okay. We've got okay. Two.
I'll make a motion then for August 8th minute approval.
Is there a second?
I'll second that, Colleen Thompson.
Thanks, Colleen. Any further discussion on those? All in favor, say aye.
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 Unanimous. August 22nd.
I make a motion to approve August 22nd.
I'll second that.
Okay. Yeah, there were no comments on that one.
I wasn't there.
Okay.
Sorry,
so abstain.
Yes, abstain.
Sorry.
Any further discussion? All right, all those in favor, say aye.
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 Four ayes and one abstention. All right. We are to our town council liaison.
Can I just make a comment on minutes? I would like to state that the stamped records are really great, and for any of the, I mean, the stamped record, the record stamps on the of where things are on the recording is really helpful for going back and just and for I think the Planning Commission in general for going back and figuring out exactly what we were saying. So that would be very helpful as they are fairly minimal, which is fine. That's basically it. Covering our information, we have a lot of information to recover, basically memory. Anyway, so that would be great if that could happen. The only other thing was that if the timestamp for when we stop, I don't know why, but I appreciate that. Like the meeting adjourns.
It says 9:02 or 9:03.
Yeah, thanks.
4:11.
No, we don't do that anymore. We don't do that anymore.
She just wants to be able to count up how many hours I spent in planning commission. Okay. Yeah, I think the timestamps. I know Lacey had asked me because some of our discussion has been no, and trying to sort of document that
right.
is really hard. And we've been doing a lot of interactive discussion, and so that's helpful. And sometimes the next iteration reflects some of that, and sometimes it doesn't. I'm going to talk a little bit about that when
Great.
We go through these ordinances. So, okay. Mr. Varant, the town liaison report.
Real briefly, we've got the joint meeting.
Wait, here, you.
Yeah. We have the town meeting coming up on October 1st, the joint meeting. I've had more than enough opportunities to comment, so I will be waiting for that meeting to do it in the context of the full town council. And later tonight, with your permission, I'm available to make a quick presentation on the design and infrastructure standards.
Great. Yeah, I sort of pushed on John because the older town infrastructure design standards, which we refer to numerous times in our subdivision code, are something that we're going to have to pass or adopt or recommend to the town council at the same time we do all of this other stuff. And so he's put together a draft brief presentation that I'm hoping we can cover in upcoming business, and then we'll talk about it in more detail at our next meeting.
Yeah. Can I just a clarification? The town meeting is actually a joint meeting with the Planning Commission, and
on October 1st.
Okay, Tuesday.
It's a Tuesday, right? And their full meeting is October 3rd. So they've agreed to have a joint meeting with us specifically to go over the subdivision code before we have our public hearing on October 17th. So,
and the design standards you're talking about are the road.
Yeah.
That paper that you.
He had given it to us before, but there's even more things.
Oh, okay.
So, yeah, just.
Yeah.
Yeah,
no,
we'll,
he just really did us
okay. We'll talk about it here. And we are, I will say, John and I are totally on the same page about what's in this. So the Planning Commission, we're going to weigh in on all of this stuff. Okay. Staff reports. Jessica. Lacey.
No. I don't
think. All right. And we do have Aaron. So,
yeah, just a quick note to say that we have an RSTR application in process and a subdivision preliminary application. So depending on how all of those go, we'll regroup on that as soon as possible, possibly in October.
Right. Aaron, when you bring us the RSTR application,
yep.
can you bring it to us in the context of what our code says in terms of, you know, how many RSTRs we have and, you know, which ones are already licensed and so on? I mean, I know the town council has actually talked about RSTRs and our need to get on top of them. So I'm hoping if there's a new one in the works, we've got some context for where we are with all of them.
Okay, sounds good.
All right. That's it, staff reports. Okay, public comments on agenda items, not necessarily on the zoning ordinance because we're going to have a hearing on the zoning ordinance. So if you have public comments on things other than that, we'd love to hear them now. We have one person sitting in the room and he's not going to make any public comment. Anybody online want to make a public comment about something on our agenda? There's two public members up there, I guess. And I'm not seeing any hands raised, so I'm going to move along. So our discussion on the zoning ordinance, and I wanted to do this before we do the public comment or the public hearing, because we haven't talked about this ordinance. So what we've talked about, the pieces that need to be covered in it at our last meeting, there was a one pager that was sort of all the things that I thought we needed to address section by section in the zoning ordinance. And that's what essentially is in this ordinance. Now, it's weird, honestly, for us to be talking about this before we actually go through the subdivision ordinance, because this is in response to the subdivision ordinance. Yes, the zoning ordinance. But the reason for that is, as I read through the zoning code, it very explicitly says the town council has to have a hearing, the planning commission has to have a hearing on any zoning ordinances. So we have to get this to the town council in a timely manner so they can work their way through it and then have a public hearing after our public hearing. If we waited until our next meeting to have a public hearing, and then we passed it on to the town council, they would be very short of time in terms of trying to have a public hearing on the zoning. So it's why it's a little bit out of order. But I don't honestly think there's anything substantive that we haven't talked about before that's in this zoning ordinance. It's pretty much administrative. There's one point that I want to ask you about, but the rest of it is, you know, this definition is different in what we're putting in the subdivision code than what we had in the zoning code, or we have to put the ALUA in here. So I don't know how, if you've read this and you want to comment on it, that would be great. Otherwise, we can go through it line by line.
I have a couple of comments.
Okay.
The building lot part, which is at the top of, let's see, the second page.
Lot.
Building lot.
On the zoning ordinance?
Yeah. Or wait, maybe that's the third page. Sorry. It's one of the repeal and replace with items.
It's third page, yeah.
I guess I wonder if there was a reason we ditched the original one. I kind of like the original one better. I feel like the new one is potentially more confusing. And I say confusing because the second piece of it, so starting from the beginning, a lot that allows construction of a dwelling. This term excludes any tract of land shown on a subdivision plot that is limited to use for shared access, trails, utilities, open space, agriculture, la la la. And I guess I felt like that sort of flirts with that thing we had trouble with a couple years ago that talked about, and I know we say this explicitly in the subdivision code, but that talks about like utility spots and driveway spots being included in the acreage. I think that that sort of confuses that a little bit because it's saying it excludes shared access trails, et cetera. And so I guess that just had me wondering why we switched it because the first one seems more straightforward and less confusing to me.
Yeah. I just went along with what we had ended up with in the subdivision code, which I actually think might have come from John. I am okay with keeping what we had. So deleting this whole thing and taking this building lot definition and putting it in our subdivision.
I like that better.
So
What did you just say?
I said, so don't. This new definition, the
Yeah.
second one there, is
Right.
what we put in the subdivision
Right.
code. We nix that and
Okay.
we use the definition that's already in our zoning code, which is the top one there, and we put that one in our subdivision code. So we would, our definition of building lot would be, well, it doesn't have to say for the purposes of lot size averaging. We could take that out
Yeah.
because it's a building lot, period.
Yeah, so after a building lot, that's where it would start,
Right.
is any lot.
A building lot
I
is.
could go with that. It is.
Because lot size averaging is another thing.
Right.
Right.
So, but what we would need to do in, then what we would do in our zoning code is we would modify the definition of building lot by taking out that first phrase. So
Yeah,
we
for the
would
purpose.
put that, there would be a change in our code. So where would we, we said repeal all of these. So I guess what we would do is just say modify the definition of building lot by deleting for the purposes of lot size averaging.
Yeah. Right.
So not repeal, but modify. Everybody okay with that?
Yeah, it
Everybody
makes more
follow?
sense.
Yeah.
I also like the original language better than the place of
Yeah.
the
Okay. Okay. And then that definition will go into our subdivision code. Okay.
The definition
Of building
of
lot.
lot. Okay.
Rather than what's in the subdivision code now.
Okay.
I mean, the other option is we just change it here and we don't define it in the subdivision code because it's already in our zoning code, which, we were trying to.
But there's also
I mean, we use the term in the subdivision code, so it wouldn't hurt to have the same definition in both places.
yeah. The other one I had is also in the repeal replace with section. It's above this, the driveway one. I feel like I've said this a bunch of times, but I'll say it again. I think I get very nervous about I know we're going to try to do the road standards thing along with it and at the same time, but it makes me nervous to like change the driveway thing to only one lot. With like, for me, I want to know the road standards get passed before we do that. Does that make sense? Because otherwise you're putting people in a position where putting a street instead of a driveway is like a huge deal as it is right now. Do you know what I mean? So like, if we pass this without passing the road standards, I become uncomfortable with this.
Okay. Well, hopefully it's all going to happen at the same time.
Yeah.
I mean, it's because right. They are sort of a layered, right? There's a driveway.
Yeah.
There's a private road.
So maybe whenever they're on the agenda, I'll advocate for the road one going first. And then we'll know.
And can I just say that a driveway being to a private spot means that you're not, that's one person's responsibility. It's not two people's responsibility. Right. And that's when the confusion and the issues become an issue, you know, as far as who is responsible for what.
Right. But not even in terms of responsibility, but just like the actual standard of the driving surface is way different if it's a driveway or if it's a private street currently. And the road standards that we want to pass would make that more achievable. But okay. Currently, it's not really very okay. Achievable to that like, you know, if then if you're sharing a driveway with someone, suddenly you have a street and you have to like make it a million feet wide and do all this stuff to it. So, yeah, I guess we'll just try to do those at the same time. The only other thing I have on here is super minor. I've noticed and maybe I can do this, but I've noticed in reading this stuff in general that we seem to like sometimes use the word plat and sometimes use the word plot, and it should be plat.
It should be plat
all the time. Like even in the replace with language for the building lot, which we got rid of, it says plot. So I think it wouldn't be a bad idea at some point in the subdivision code to just do like a control F, like, you know, just like assign a word and just look for plot and
actually,
change it to plat.
Only one of one.
Okay, great.
Yeah.
In the zoning thing or in the subdivision code though?
No. Oh, in the zoning. Sorry.
Yeah. You know, I'm wondering about in the subdivision.
That actually should
I could do that,
a subdivision lot.
Oh, okay. But I've
but seen it. Says it's
I've
wrong
seen it before,
in our
though.
Subdivision code too. It's wrong. But we're going to replace it. So it won't be in there. But yes, we can do a search.
Yeah, I see a couple in here in the subdivision code. So let's just do that at some point.
This one right now, since you're talking about it, this is the only one that says plot, and it says plots under.
And we're repealing the whole thing.
So it doesn't matter.
Perfect.
But there are some in the subdivision code.
Yeah,
so let's look for that when we get to the subdivision code. Okay, so just to go back, Elena, you're okay doing the driveway change with the commitment that we're going to do the road thing at the exact same
time. Yeah, I just don't want to lose track of that.
Okay. Because it is that single lot definition. I mean, that, you know, that's the distinction, because it, if it is more than one, then it becomes a road.
Right.
Okay, any other comments on this?
Okay, yeah, I do have, sorry. Just for clarification, the Bouldertown infrastructure standards, they are not part of the subdivision, or are they part of the subdivision ordinance?
They are not part of the ordinance. They are a standalone document that will be a set of standards that the ordinance refers
to. Okay.
And says you have to comply with, and John and I, and we're going to talk about this, but okay. I think of it as almost a set of, well, the roads are pretty explicit. You have to do this and this and this. But like a subdivision improvement plan, there'd be a template or a guidance that says, if you're developing a subdivision improvement plan, you need this and this and this and this and this in it. So it's like a primer on, you know, the way that you comply with the guidelines, the standards that we're putting in the code. So it gives you sort of the explicit, you know, how do you write a fire protection plan?
Right.
How do you build
the
road?
Again, then?
Is that
it won't be attached to the ordinance. It will be a document that's on our website that is the set of standards that have to be met. It's almost like the Utah Wildland Urban Interface Code. I mean, here's a standard that one has to comply with if one is doing this or that.
So we are not, so who is, okay.
So John's going to give us a draft. He'll give us a preview tonight. Hopefully we have a sort of full draft by our next meeting. I know he has run it by other experts because none of us, I can't tell you how to build a road. I can't tell you how thick the gravel has to be. So he's run it by other folks. And we will look at it and say, yeah, it looks pretty good, and pass it on to the town council for their adoption at the same time they adopt the subdivision code. And similarly, the application form, we need to be doing this at the same time.
Right, because it seems like it's part of the application form, basically.
Right. It is. It's, you know, if you're going to write a drainage plan, here's what you have to include. If you're going to build it and you're going to do a fire protection plan, here's what you have to include.
Okay. The other thing that I have is development agreement, the agreement recorded with a plat.
Are you reading the subdivision code? Yes. We're not there yet. We're
no,
still in the zoning code.
Okay, sorry.
We'll get there in just a minute.
I thought we were starting with that. Okay, never mind.
Any other comments on the zoning?
I have a question on the H5 table of development standards. There's a line at the bottom of the page, maximum size of 1,000 square feet.
That's what's in our code now. This is not a new table.
Okay. So are we going to reinforce it?
We're repealing it.
Should we strike it? I mean,
no. So this is the table that we're going to put into our code. Our current code has most of these things in it, but it also has all of this language about lot size averaging, which we are taking out of zoning and putting in the subdivision code because it was confusing. So this table, I literally went back to our code as it existed last year and retyped that whole table to put in this document.
Oh my gosh.
Because I couldn't cut and paste it. So
Yeah,
this was took me a bit. But this is what is currently law. So
and that's just for accessory buildings.
Yeah,
that's
right.
Main that's yeah, yeah. That's just like an ADU.
Right. An ADU has
okay.
It's like
the very end of
that
square previous page,
What does it say, ADU?
Right, accessory buildings.
You can scroll down.
Required to know how the standards for accessory buildings.
Right.
Okay.
And lot size averaging will be in our...
It's in our subdivision.
Okay. All right. That's good.
Any other comments? Okay, so we've made one change, the drop on the building lot. We're going to keep the original with a modification of, for the purposes of lot size averaging, it gets deleted. And it simply is a building lot is a lot that is not separately developed for common use or open space, which is thus available, in the applicable. For any principal use, which opens it up. Anyway, that's the only change we're going to make in this. Oh, yeah. I wanted to ask you. On page 4, computation of time. So in our subdivision code, we had the discussion about it being business days, right? That everything is business days. This chapter has everything being calendar days. So I didn't want to go through the whole chapter and try to change anything, but I thought what I would do is make explicit for actions related to subdivision applications, and decisions outlined in Chapter 152, time requirements are measured in business days. So I just wanted to make it clear that we're going to be measuring our time when we're doing subdivision activities in business days.
Well, and it's on 153.049C, you're right, it says calendar days, and in C it says time requirements are measured in business days.
That was my addition.
Okay,
I added so that's
that
in what, there.
Okay.
So it's a...
Is,
okay.
I guess the... I'm a fan of calendar days because there's absolute certainty and no one has to wonder whether we recognize Canadian Thanksgiving or not. So no one has to calculate all of this. If it's calendar days, it's absolutely clear across the board. So, and I recognize, yeah, like.
For a short-staffed jurisdiction, calendar days makes the times shorter, right? So because the state has explicitly put the number of days you can look at something. And I actually think it says business days in state code.
I think it says that.
And so we're trying to give Aaron or the Alua basically enough time to look at these things because calendar days, when the state is explicit about 15 and 40 and 30, really cuts down on how much time you have to review anything.
Okay.
So that was the rationale
yeah.
for doing
yeah.
these
yeah.
days because it makes it
and then
a little
clearly
easier.
There are weekends.
Right.
Yeah. And then on that, I've said this before, but on the site where the application is, we should probably just like list what our holidays are. And then
yeah.
there's no debating if Columbus Day should have been in there or not, you know.
That's a good idea. Yeah, the state or the town uses this.
Yeah.
There's something for your list, Jessica.
Thanks,
oh,
Jess.
That's me.
Yeah.
Sorry. I'm sure it's very easy to pull this.
Yeah.
It's really
yeah.
crazy holidays.
Everybody's got, yeah.
Boulder Town Days or something. So are you all okay with this? I mean, I
yeah.
put this in here to try to be more explicit since the zoning code, I think usually, I didn't go through to see if it always says calendar days, but I was trying to make it clear that in subdivisions you get more time. Okay, we're good with this? Thumbs up on
yeah.
this? All right, then we're gonna have a public, so let's see, do we close our meeting?
Yes.
Yeah,
can I have a motion to close our meeting?
I'll make a motion to close the meeting. I'll second
public
that.
Meeting.
Public meeting.
Sorry.
If you let
before we open,
if you let her finish, she can actually do the whole thing.
That's
one
right.
Motion. Sorry.
I just read.
You can.
Okay.
And
make
open
a motion
the
to close
now.
Open
that. Okay. I'll make a motion to close the public meeting and open the.
Well, we're closing our.
Public
a regular meeting
yes.
and opening a public yeah public closing
you're right,
public
Tina.
Meeting and opening
right,
I'm sorry,
and open a public hearing for the zoning
right.
changes
the zoning
ordinance.
Yep.
I'll second that, Colleen Thompson.
Any discussion? All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
All right, so our public hearing is open. Do we have any comments from the public on our zoning ordinance? Response is overwhelming.
Mm-hmm.
We're so good.
I'll speak to let somebody online go first.
Okay, go ahead, John.
All right, John, it looks like there isn't anybody who's.
Well, thank you for the opportunity to speak. I am speaking tonight as a member of the town council, as well as a citizen. And as Adam McFarland has pointed out, it's not appropriate for a member of the planning commission to speak as the member of the public at a public hearing for the planning commission, but a member of the town council can. So anyway, in that context, several things. One, just looking at this document, Nancy, and I think it's just a great stab at what has to be done. But if I was the codifier, I'd get a little confused. So for the benefit of the codifier, for the benefit of the codification, when this comes to town council for a vote, it should probably be in a very consistent strikeout and underline format for the changes, and all, be careful that the numbering is all there and that all the parenthetical comments have been removed. So those are formatting, not substantive changes. Related to that, I think I always advocate very careful proofreading. We have had multiple cases on my watch that I feel embarrassed about where we fixed one thing but missed another. So proofreading doesn't just involve reading the text. It involves things like doing electronic search for plot versus plat, and verse. It also helps to do a search, for example, on all these definitions in the state code to make sure that we didn't cause some gap or create a redundancy between state code. So doing those electronic searches can be very, very helpful. And of course, the more eyes that look at the final draft, the better. So proofreading, very important. In several of the definitions that are omitted, I will personally take on checking to make sure that we didn't create any gaps by some of the stuff that we deleted. I've always been an advocate that we should not repeat what's in defined in state law, because if we are the same, we're wasting paper, and if we're any word different, we're causing confusion. So it's better to just let the state law speak for itself, but I will look at those definitions carefully. I appreciate your comment, Daryl, about the 1,000 square feet on the auxiliary buildings. It's something I've commented on for years, ever since the zoning ordinance was first passed, that if I call it a horse barn, I can make it as big as I want. But if I call it a woodworking shop, so I'm magically limited to 1,000 square feet, which is actually, if you count both floors, smaller than my garage. So that was an interesting comment. So that's something that, but what I'm really alluding to is that after this rush on the subdivision ordinance, there is a massive amount in the zoning ordinance that also has to be looked at. And that there's going to be a lot of work for Planning Commission in the next year. On the calendar days versus business days, again, I will run a case like this. I would want to run a good check against state law and see how often in the land use section of state law they use one term or the other. Since that would probably override whatever we do. The two things I do like about calendar days, one is, as Daryl says, it's absolutely precise. The other thing is that it has the effect of keeping things being the same day of the week. That, for example, now we know that if something is going to be up for public hearing in 10 days, it needs to be out on a Monday, for our Thursday meeting. So it just makes it a little more predictable. If the state law has already mandated calendar days, we can't really extend it by saying business days. But in most cases, the state, with the exception of the things in the subdivision code, the state generally leaves it up to us to say how many days we require. So if we really want more days, we can say 12 days instead of 10 days if that's a staffing problem. And I definitely appreciate your comment, Elena, about the timing. We'll have to, it's good. I've mentioned this to Nancy. It's going to be very interesting because we're going to have the possibly a subdivision application coming through right at the same meeting where we're repealing the old subdivision ordinance and adopting the new one. So we'll have to look very carefully at the sequence in which those motions are being made and voted on at town council. And I think that is everything I have on the zoning.
Thank you, John. Anybody else?
So let's see. So basically checking, that's a job. The state code and all these things.
Yeah, so let's close the public hearing. Okay. So I have a motion to close the public hearing.
I'll make a motion to close the public hearing and reopen our regular meeting.
I'll second it, Tina.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. All right. So maybe we switch number 10 on our agenda and we talk about the zoning ordinance first, just because it's still in our head. I put subdivision first, but it doesn't.
Yeah.
We okay with that?
Yeah.
Okay. I do want to point out, I've got the state code here. I did a lot of cross-checking and going back and forth and trying to figure out what was in state code, what was in our code, what we'd have to say. State code says business days for the subdivision review. It's explicit. It says business days, 20 business days. So, you know, if we're going to have calendar days elsewhere in our code, well, we're just going to have to be clear. But state is explicit on it being business days. So that's why I think that was another reason why we put it in there. As I was doing this, and it did take me a long time to do this, I thought, where is my edit? I mean, who does this? Who formats it? Because there are some couple of things in here I could not get formatted right. I couldn't get the, you know, the A, B's, and C's to line up. I mean, it was making me crazy. So who does that? I mean,
Phoenix,
so hire Phoenix to format for us.
She's an inmate, that's what she does. She actually edits and does different language and formats things.
Because I would be open. I agree with John. The notes have to come out. I put them in there for you guys.
Yeah.
I mean, exactly. Notes have to come out. The strikeout and underline formatting. I mean, yeah, somebody wants, I tried to come up with, you know, something that was clear here, but, you know, it's not exactly what it is. And I didn't want to reproduce the entire zoning code. I mean, that's sort of the,
no, you don't.
The dilemma of, anyway, so, but it sounds to me like most of what John just said was editing.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So I am open to passing this along to somebody. And I mean, if we want to approve this with the amendments we made and say it's our recommendation to the town council that they adopt this. I mean, you know, we put it through an editor.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So
I think that's,
I mean, is that, or can the lawyers do that? I mean, is that something they do, or?
I don't think it's necessary.
Yeah. So
for a lawyer to.
Yeah, I don't think we need a lawyer to do.
Daryl, what do you think?
No, it's expensive.
Yeah.
Yeah, so if there is someone, does Phoenix know the sort of codifying structure? I mean, that's the issue is, you know, when we have to give it to American Legal or whoever gets it, if it has to be in a certain form for them to be able to then put it into our code online. I mean,
when does this have to be
done? What about case?
Like, when do you want this to be reformed? Which meeting will this?
So this, if we are okay with this, and I'd say let's go through the subdivision code and come back and potentially agree to this, vote on it, have a motion and say, based on our review, based on the public hearing, you know, we're fine with this and we're going to recommend it to the town council. Then it would go to them for their October 3rd meeting, potentially.
Actually,
we need to have both at the same meeting. Otherwise, we could create contradictions if we repeal stuff in zoning, and we still have real subdivision code applying to the act of application. That's what I've got to be careful to avoid.
Yeah, we do want to avoid that. Although I guess, given you have to have a public hearing on this, I mean,
we could take it to public hearing, but not approve.
Right. So if we give it to you on October 3rd, you could have a public hearing at your November meeting and not adopt it until the December meeting. So that would be a goal that you were able to have a hearing in November.
So, as far as the reformatting, I've seen American Legal has very specific. Do they tell you?
I have no idea.
That's what I can speak on. I feel like I can do the formatting of what he's talking about, of making it very clear, like what gets striked out, what gets under, like what is new. I can do that reformatting. They actually don't, they have their own formatting. So we send it to them in a Word and a PDF, and then they know
how to put it
format it into their, like the chart. They do that with their system. So it doesn't have to be as specific. So I feel like I can do that part of it. It's the other editing part. But, I mean, I can go through that too. I just don't know how.
The other editing, like looking for plot versus plat.
Well, that's really easy. I just mean like commas and stuff. I mean, so, I know how to use spell check, but it's not my normal job.
I mean, I did due diligence in looking at definitions at the state level in our subdivision code. Now, if someone wants to cross-check all of that, you can. I mean, that, you know, would be an option. But, you know, somebody does have to do that. I took the time as best I could when I wrote this not to create conflicts. So if somebody sees conflicts, then they should point those out, I guess. So, John, if you or someone on town council wants to go through it all, we can do that, obviously.
Well, yeah. Okay, a couple of things. First, I do appreciate all the effort that you have put in, and it is awesome. I come from a culture in engineering where no document went out unless two people reviewed it. So, you know, I think it's the more eyes that look at it, the better. So anyone who volunteers to give it a very careful reading is going to be much, much appreciated. With regard to American Legal, the understanding I got from Peg is they take it as a text document and then they re-enter it into their system. So the thing that's important is that it be totally unambiguous what our intent was. And on two of the last three ordinances that did get codified, there were errors that took place. So we need to make it very easy for the codifier to understand exactly what we deleted and what we inserted and what our wording is. And
the codifier made mistakes, or yes,
the codifier made mistakes. One case, a parenthetical comment got put in, for example. you know, I mean, and it's, but in that, in the burden is really on us to make sure that what we give them mm-hmm. is unambiguous, that this is the ordinance as it should read. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, which is what I tried to do.
And in addition,
but if somebody else wants to read it, I mean, it sounds like Elena read through it in detail. I mean, if
I'm happy to go through it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And we made mistakes too, Jessica.
Wouldn't hurt to have multiple eyes on it.
Okay. So it sounds like Jessica's willing to work on the formatting, the strikeout and underline, whatever it's going to take to clarify it. Maybe she can do that.
Daryl said he would do
it. Right. Well, I'm saying, and delete the notes. Mm-hmm. I mean, I can send you a file that's, you know, doesn't, where I fix this, I'll send you the file where I fix that. And then if you put it in the format that you think will be appropriate for the town council to see, and then ultimately go to American Legal, and then Daryl and Elena and anybody else who wants to give it a second or third pair of eyes, that would be great.
Cool. Yeah, because when I read through it for the meetings, I'm not necessarily looking for grammar. I'm just looking for content. So I'll do it again for grammar.
Okay. Okay. So, but let's, I mean, if somebody wants to make a motion to sort of move forward with this, adopt it with the changes we've just talked about, I'd be okay with that. Or we can wait.
I would like to make motion to move forward on this and make the changes that we have suggested. And anybody who is interested in actually reviewing it after it comes back from Jessica, then I would feel good about that.
So that's a motion.
That's a motion. That's a very long motion, but I'm sorry. I make a motion to accept the changes that we made tonight for the zoning administration. The zoning ordinance.
I'll second that.
Any further discussion? All those in favor,
Say aye.
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 Aye. Unanimous. All right. We just did ordinance. Okay. Now, the fun one. Subdivision. Thank you, Ryan. So I formatted this differently because when I went through what we had previously been looking at, I realized, I mean, it was weird because it said, here's chapter 152, our ordinance. And then it had the ordinance language and the town clerk and, you know, the signatures. Anyway, I formatted it differently to try to tee it up in the way that we typically see ordinances come to town council. The ordinance is this sort of first page here, what she has up there that says, we're going to adopt this chapter of our code. So everything else in it, and this is one of the changes I made, throughout the whole thing, we kept saying, well, you have to comply with the conditions in this ordinance. Well, it's not the conditions in the ordinance. I mean, when you read this online, it's the conditions in the code, in the chapter 152 of our code. So wherever it said ordinance in the document, I changed it to in this chapter. And Michael had done that with some of the language. And when he did that, it was like, yeah, that's the way it should be. It's not, you know, comply with this ordinance. So that's one change that you'll see throughout it. I changed wherever it said, you know, comply with the ordinance, I said in this chapter. Okay. Should we go through it? And I tried to simplify this language. I realized what we had from Caden was pretty much cut and paste from sort of Garfield County, which didn't always fit the way we say things and the way we do things. So I highlighted this in yellow because I put this language in here. If you don't like it, we can change it. But to me, it was sort of short and sweet. You know, we're repealing our subdivision chapter and we're replacing it with this chapter because the state has told us we have to make changes. Now, we didn't have to change everything, but we took the approach that it would be easier because our current subdivision code is so messed up, it would be easier to start over. So that's why we've done this whole thing. Okay. Should we just go through it as quickly as we can? So it's 8 o'clock, we have an hour.
Let's do it.
Scroll, Jessica, scroll. You can go through this quickly because this table of contents just reflects. Okay, so there's a change, this chapter. I'm going to focus on the yellow stuff.
Yeah.
If you've read it, and there are other places where I made changes, but for me, I didn't think they were substantive. So, you know, what I did was where I thought we really needed to focus, I left it in here. So I left this Boulder Town infrastructure design standards in here because it's going to be really important that we get that right, because there are a lot of things that it's going to specify in terms of standards. So we'll just scroll through this. Go back. So conceptual plan. So we didn't have a definition for this. And the more I thought about it, the more I thought we should put one in here. So that's why I highlighted it. And it is something that the ALUA doesn't look at, but the zoning administrator looks at. It's not required. And it says later on that it's not required, but it's highly encouraged because it gives Aaron a chance to tell an applicant, these are the rules, this is how you have to comply with them, sort of clean up any questions someone might have. So, and there's no fee for the conceptual plan. That's something I put later in the document. So to me, it's a good practice to
you know, have somebody come in with, gee, I'm thinking about doing this, and get some reaction from the zoning administrator. So if you're all okay with that, we'll leave it there. All right, and just before you go further down, building lot up there, I will replace it with the definition that was in zoning, okay? Mm-hmm. So just to highlight that, I've got that noted here. All right, development agreement. So this, I ran across this as I was doing research on how we, in our lot size averaging, and you will also see I put in another way that you can try to protect rural land and create more lots. We can talk about that. We don't have to leave it in there. But they refer to development agreements, which are a way that you can try to protect a plat. And it may be that you develop an agreement with the town that says, we're going to donate this lot here for a park, or, you know, we're going to do nature tours on this lot here. So it's a tool. It doesn't have to be used, but it's one way that you can try to maintain open space or agricultural land when you're dividing up your lots and you're saying, we are not going to build on this one. So it's a tool. And I think in our infrastructure design standards, there would be a template for it or an example of it. These are the kinds of things you want to include in a development agreement. I did a bunch of research, and I've got a whole bunch of articles on, are development agreements overused? Are they necessary? I thought I'd put it in here. If nobody, the other thought on all of this, and this is a suggestion John has made, we may want to sunset this. We may want to recommend this is our chapter that's in place for the next year till the end of 2025, and give us a chance to see if anybody uses it or if it becomes onerous. So this was one of those things that's in here just as a tool.
So it's okay. My confusion with this was that it's a fairly specific thing, obviously, and there's, you know, the dedication of roads is part of it.
No,
it wouldn't be.
It wouldn't be. Okay. I mean, the way this is defined here is it really just goes with a plat or a lot that you're trying to maintain as open space. Now, I don't know that that's the official definition of it. So, I mean, I may have to go back and do a little more digging, or somebody needs to go back and do more digging on it. But it was a tool I saw in other jurisdictions as a way to try to preserve some open space.
Okay.
But we could.
Well, I think, like you said too, the thing about this is if we put a sunset clause or something, then that does give us the opportunity in a year to look at what has happened in that year and make changes if we can, if they're applicable. I think that's a great idea. Because we always think that we have something, and then it's just stuck, it's set in stone, and it never is. There, we can always make changes.
My only concern about the sunset clause is then it has to sunset, and we have to write the subdivision code again, potentially. I mean,
I mean, I feel like something as small as this, we can just take it out if we want to.
Right. Yeah.
No point making it like a pilot program unless it's like something crazy, I think.
I mean, just like we're changing the definitions now and taking them out, and we can do those things. So maybe we don't need a sunset clause. Basically, is we need to, in a year from now, make a choice as a planning commission in a year to go back and look at, you know, so that we set ourselves up.
Keep it on our own radar.
Yeah, and then it wouldn't be a year thing. It could be.
I was gonna ask if it's a sunset, also, like if you say it's a year and something, you know, like
there's a big change that you guys realize that happened with the lot size averaging, and that was only a couple months later.
Right,
so if you put a sunset, can you not make changes to let your work something kind of comes up? You need to be able to.
I mean, the town council, we can recommend something gets amended anytime.
Yeah, okay. Exactly. So, exactly.
Yeah. So we don't necessarily have to say it has a lifespan.
Right. So no sunset, but just remember to keep it on our radar to go back to it.
Easement, let's see, why did I highlight this? This may have been, John had given me a lot of comments, and this may have been something that I don't know what to look at in terms of just definition. Or this may have come from state. I don't know why I highlighted it, so sorry about that.
Well, they're just definitions. I mean, did you add this definition?
I can't remember. Did I bring the last version? I can't tell you how many versions I printed out on my desk at all. I mean, if nobody has any questions, if it sounds reasonable, yeah. I'll just leave it in there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Improvements, the same thing.
Yeah.
I did on the private road, so I did take out that sentence because of all our complexity. It's not, very private maintenance agreements are going to be encouraged, and we talk about those later.
Right.
Subdivision improvement plan. So we did talk about this at our last meeting, and it was. I don't know if we talked about it as a group or Tina, you and I had a discussion, I think, that I asked Katie for a subdivision improvement plan, an example, because I didn't know what it was. He said he doesn't have any, that he hasn't gotten an application for a subdivision that has been anything other than an exception. So they have not done a full-blown subdivision in Garfield County, which I thought was a really interesting observation. But he said,
but there's been subdivisions.
Well, he claims that all of them are done under the exemptions, that they're either subdivision amendments of an existing subdivision, or they were a minor lot because it was some ag thing.
And just remember, county means county land. So just because it happened at Cambridge or Tropic doesn't mean that it's county. Because Tropic Town has a huge one that's on the table right now. That doesn't mean they're within the county, but the county didn't have their hands.
Right. And he asked the attorney, and the attorney never responded to me. But he highly recommends it because it is the plans that sort of civil engineering plans associated with the required infrastructure improvements. I put in here, as outlined in the Boulder Town Infrastructure Design Standards, so this comes back to John, this could end up being just the page that says subdivision improvement plan, you have to do 1, 2, 3, and 4. I mean, it can be as intense or as open-ended as we put in our design standards. But it's the way that they're going to build out. They come and tell us how they're going to build out the infrastructure that's going to support the subdivision.
I like that.
Okay, great.
And then basically the one I also said, it needs to, that it complies with our infrastructure design standards. So there's a lot of pressure on you, John. You can see this here. All right, before you go on here, Michael's on the phone, so no, I'm sorry, go ahead down where I struck it out. I didn't highlight it, but I struck it out. So my inconsistency here. Michael gave us this language in B last time, and the more I looked at it, the more weird it seemed to me, because it's not in any other place that we have in our code that I'm aware of, where we actually say, if you do something wrong, it costs you $500. And then, so I just thought, can we leave this at some high level here? If we want to write some administrative code that the town passes and says, if you screw up, it costs you $500. If you do it two times, it costs you $2,500. But it doesn't have to be unique to our subdivision code.
And then the appeals, I took that out because we have this whole long appeal process for the application that's inherent in state law. And it seemed like we didn't necessarily have to put it in here. So I tried to simplify it.
Yeah. I'm wondering if there is some merit to keeping under 152.009, keeping Part B, because if we try to make the penalties just general in a different ordinance, then, you know, a large developer could, it could make business sense to make one or two penalties. So a barking dog offense is different than a skirting safety or construction requirements. So maybe this, if we keep it, because then we can add teeth to the second and third offense. You know, that's, I guess that's what I'm wondering. Because if it's a small developer, just locally DIY, the odds of maybe goofing something up, that might be, I don't know what the odds are, but so maybe offense number one is a light slap on the wrist, but then we have something. So if somebody is playing shenanigans, that there's actual teeth to it. And I guess, so that's kind of the logic why some people put this in the criminal, add criminal penalties, is to try to scare developers from playing shenanigans. But especially where we have a high number of DIY people, a criminal penalty is a disaster if someone's a nurse or does any licensing, you know, it's just a massive headache they don't need to deal with.
I do just want to remind that this was a conversation you guys had with the town council and with Michael, and this was, the town council wanted this to go into effect. They asked Michael to help put this in the subdivision ordinance. Later, he will help rewrite the entire, I guess, I don't remember the exact word, but the violations and the appeals section for the code, because so many of ours are criminal offenses, and to change it to this. So he put the wording in this subdivision ordinance because it's passing now, and that's what the town council had asked him to do. And then later the town council with Michael will do it for the entire of all of our ordinances.
So we can leave it in there.
Yeah, because I was going to say, I thought we talked about using, I mean, I do remember talking about it and having it, I mean, so.
We talked about how we don't have that. Yeah, this is that thing of enforcement.
We don't have any enforcement. That was where it came, the subject of enforcement. We don't have any other way to have any kind of enforcement because we don't have police or, you know, that. But this way, I would like to leave it in and see what the town council wants it.
Yeah, if the town council can decide what they want.
Yeah, exactly.
So we would change first paragraph to A and then leave this in there as B.
Yeah.
Okay.
And I think I remember the appeals too thing. I mean, I can
well,
see.
Well, the appeals, the only reason,
right.
I mean, we did talk about that, but there's such an elaborate appeal process later on.
That we could take that, the appeal, take that out, but not the penalty. I mean, the penalty is new, so I'd be fine taking the appeals out because there is other remedies, administrative remedies.
Right. What are others think?
I could go either way. I don't know how to punish it.
I mean, the appeals, the appeal of the appeals section is that we don't have a lot of resources, so explicitly requiring that they jump through the hoops that are on paper is a nice protection for the town, frankly. So I think there is actually some value in keeping it there, unless
that there is an elaborate appeal process later in the document.
What Yeah, I get. Don't know. Here they're on notice that you can't even challenge us. Like, don't bother spending your money on an attorney and taking us to district court unless you've gone through the appeal process.
Okay. Well, we can leave it in there. And if town council doesn't like it, yeah, take it out.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Okay. So then we'll renumber the subsequent sections.
All
right. Yeah, it's all right. This is the point of this, is you know, to have, so it'll be 15211 and 15212. Okay. All right. The site prep work prohibited. So, you know, this is, I highlighted this because I did delete. It doesn't make any sense to me. And maybe I just was in a bad headspace. No excavation, grading, or other improvement related to development or building shall take place on any land within the, until all of the following are complete. But then we say later in the document, you can't record it until you put the infrastructure in. So having three and four up there didn't make any sense to me.
Yeah. It's a problem we already have.
All right. So yeah. I took those out.
Yeah.
And then John may have an opinion. But anyways, the infrastructure needs to be built before you record the deeds and the property. That is what it says. Okay. Everybody okay with that? But ALUA is our next section. We've talked to this. And I just highlighted, I think I added this because we wanted to be very clear that all costs for the ALUA review shall be covered by the applicant prior to subdivision approval. Okay, exemptions. So I went and read and reread and reread. It's on the next page.
And then I had a question. This prior to subdivision approval.
Subdivision application approval.
Just even they need to submit it. Like, so you need to pay for your subdivision application before your application will even be taken in. Like,
yeah, and it says that later. But okay. this is under compensation for okay. the ALUA. So it basically says all these other steps where it says there's a fee, all that has to be covered. And the ALUA can go hire a surveyor or an engineer or
okay.
and all those costs have to be paid for by the applicant. And later on it does say something to the effect that the applicant will be notified if yeah. the ALUA has to hire okay. additional experts.
Thank you.
So minor lot subdivisions here. Let's go up to exemptions here. We did have minor lot subdivisions under exemptions. I went and read and reread and read like eight times the state law on minor lot subdivisions. And as near as I can sort of get my head around it, just doesn't apply to most of our situations. I mean, it works in the county environment on ag land, and it's under the county, under state code, under the county regulations, not under municipality sort of local regulations. And I'm sorry I did this like 3 weeks ago and I'm not being very clear on remembering. But the more I read it, the more I thought this just doesn't make sense in Boulder. The one lot subdivision is under the subdivision amendment. So, and this language is state law. This is what it says in state law. If you want to adjust a property boundary, if you want to do a boundary line agreement, which is the next one, you can. This is under state law. It's an exemption from your subdivision. 152203, the subdivision amendment. This is where you can change a subdivision to create, and state law allows multiple lots. I put one lot in here. I mean, and this is up for debate. So if you go down to number two, subdivide one of the lots to create one new lot, if it will not result in a violation of this chapter or a development condition. I don't even know that that's language from the state law. I don't know what a development condition is, like a hernia or something. Anyway. Because you get really punchy.
I bet
you after a while. So there's our small lot subdivision right there in number two. And the what I did here is made a decision that said, if you're doing one of these, you don't have to have, and if you go down a little bit further, you don't have to have a road maintenance agreement. You don't have to have a stormwater drainage plan, and you don't have to have a subdivision improvement plan, but you need to meet all the other requirements of this chapter. So that was my concession to trying to figure out how do we create some do-it-yourself options. And I left it at one because as I started to think, you know, if you're doing two or three or four, you're doing a subdivision and you ought to put the infrastructure in place. Because, you know, we haven't done it very cleanly in the past, and let's try to do it cleaner as we move forward. So this is totally open for your input and your discussion. How do we want to handle this?
I feel like the way it's in here right now, though, I mean, I see that below it says the things it's exempt from, but it almost seems like you can just do it as a subdivision amendment, which is like a very simple process versus like it's not clear to me, I guess, reading this, if you were trying to do it, like what you would do. Would you just go through the subdivision amendment process and be like, look, I'm making one new lot? Or do you go through everything in this code except these three things that we say below?
You do. You go through everything in the code. And the only other concession is the preliminary application. You may not have to do a preliminary and a final because these things are actually part of the final application. So if you don't have to do those, your preliminary application, the ELUA can look at it and say, you know, you've done everything right. You've got access. You've still met these things. You've got septic. You've got water. Yeah. And you still have to do all those things.
But isn't it sort of confusing to have it just as number two up there with all those other things that are like very easy, such as like adjusting the lot lines within a subdivision is like a pretty easy process?
The only this is the way the state code reads.
Huh.
And except the state code, I think
it's confusing.
I forget how many lots they allow you to create. It's more than one.
You're not creating a lot, you're adjusting a lot.
I know, but that's why I'm saying like having them in the same list to me seems, I know what you're trying to do. I think it reads confusing. I hear you that it's that way in the state law, so maybe it's just me. But having it up there with like very simple processes seems like it's more simple than it is.
But it is an
exception. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, I just think it's kind of confusing.
Well, and I put the exemptions in there. I mean, that wasn't, that's not specifically in state code.
Yeah. Because it's, yeah, like under the heading, like existing subdivisions may be further altered as a subdivision amendment. It makes it seem like it's just an amendment and not like a subdivision.
Well, it was where I found the, subdivide one or more addition to. Yeah, it says subdivide one or more of the petitioning fee owner's lots if the subdivision will not result in a violation of a land use ordinance or a development condition. So a public hearing does not apply in the land use authority. So this is under subdivision amendments under the state code 109A60P. And, you know, when I read through this, I thought, oh, okay, there's where you do a one water.
So a one lot subdivision is a subdivision amendment.
Yes, a subdivision amendment can be a one lot subdivision. We don't have any unique category that says one lot subdivision.
It's under subdivision amendment is the title of 152.203.
Right.
And then exceptions are in it. So it's saying that exemptions are subdivision amendments. It's only, I mean, that's how I'm reading.
Yeah. Which is why I feel like it's like a little, you know, because it makes it seem like, oh, here's an easy exception. You're just doing one, go for it, you know?
I mean, you all can read 109A608. And this was, I will say, this did come from Caden. The subdivision amendments came from Caden under the exemptions. I use those words interchangeably, from subdivision requirements. And it's, you know, it's minor exceptions, although a subdivision improvement plan, you know, could be a road maintenance agreement, could be a big deal. I mean, these are, you know, these are things that if you're doing something smaller, one lot, it's not a, you don't have to do this. So
I know Elaine and I disagree on this point, but I do think that having the number is just one, then it works for a lot of people, but it really kind of ignores the desires of large acreage owners. And so maybe a balance between the one versus four or whatever it is, maybe the balance falls better by saying it's one. So, but it allow them more. So maybe two, three, or four, if the lots are 1 acre lots. So if they're using lot size averaging to create small lots, then they can make a couple of homes. So you know, a large rancher has kids that want places and they can do it. They can actually do that. Whereas if they have a large family and a lot of land, it could take 20, 30 years, 3 year increments to get little chunks off of the kids.
Yeah, I mean, lot size averaging is different. I mean, it's a different thing. This is the other unique thing here is this is in a subdivision, an existing subdivision. Okay. So it's not, if you're out somewhere and you're just a parcel, Colleen, I think, you know, this doesn't apply.
Well, then
you have to go through the subdivision process.
Did the minor lot subdivision, did that get,
so
is that gone?
That's gone. Okay.
That's gone.
That's gone. And if you all, want to go read the minor lot subdivision, again, I read it and I read it and I read it, and I just found it not to be applicable to what we were trying to do. And this may be my interpretation of it.
I would just say that the minor lot subdivision was in our ordinance originally, and it was non-workable. It just didn't, it created much more of an issue. And so, and it originally it was in it, and it was taken out.
Yeah.
So I think we need to probably.
Like I didn't think that we were doing a one lot subdivision at all, or minor subdivisions. So that's what I kind of have an issue with, basically, is I didn't know that we had one lot subdivisions.
Well, so the state law says this. I mean, again, this is a quote from, if you read 608-9A, it says if you're creating, you know, one or more lots.
Right.
It's in a subdivision and it meets these other stipulations, you can do this.
And will this be applicable after December 2024? Again,
this would be our new code,
right? Yeah,
and so the minor subdivision that previously existed was, it couldn't be part of a subdivision, you know, so you were dividing up a parcel, which I found, you know, this language made me crazy, a minor subdivision, but the first stipulation is it cannot be part of an existing subdivision, and you're creating new parcels. I mean, it's, I read it and read it and read it, and, you know, that, I guess I'd encourage you all to read it. And, you know, I can bring more explicit language. I mean, bring hard copies of the minor subdivision exemption. And we can talk about it on October 1st with the town council.
Oh, yeah. Let's do that.
That's, you know, one way we can handle this.
Yeah,
I mean, the language I put in here was an attempt to try to give the option of a one lot, but without significantly lessening the requirements for building a subdivision. I mean, you're excused from some of these things that apply to bigger, but you still have to have water, you still have to have septic. I mean, you have to have legal access.
Right.
I mean, those are the things that, you know, we don't want to create lots that can't have that. That's my logic. So I mean, maybe I'm being more stringent than others want to be, but I'm concerned about.
Well, I think that, like you just said, we can just have it on our, look at it at our joint meeting.
Yeah. Okay. Let's move on then. this was a question that was raised by somebody. I think Josh raised this question. How would we know that somebody had done this, that, you know, the public, whoever is dividing their land? And so I just put this in, who's ever dividing it shall notify the zoning administrator that they're doing this, so we're aware of it. It's not a big deal. The process. So I tried to clean this up. And I just encourage you to read it and see if it makes sense to you. It's a high-level summary. What we had in here before, the more I read it, the more it was, you know, just it wasn't clear to me. I tried to write code that I could follow, thinking, you know, if I can make sense of this, then pretty much anybody can make sense of it, right? So it's a high-level summary of the timeline and what you have to do, and then subsequent sections here get into more detail of what's required.
Right.
And a clarification on B. So if someone puts in a subdivision application or an improvement plan, and then and the LUA says, well, you need to change this and this, and then they come back with, well, I'm not going to do 12 lots, I'm going to do 15 lots, and it's something completely different, then the process starts over. They're not, you know, they can't sort of stay under the existing process. All right. And then
I think we talked about having this a summary so that people could check it off, or they knew the direction. There's like a direction that they're taking.
Yeah, I mean, it's high level. You need to read the rest of it to know sort of the details, but this gives you, you know, some idea of what's going to happen in 15 days. And then I will say, it gets really this ridiculous time thing. And they have 40 days to respond. And if they don't respond within 40 days, then the LUA gets another 20 days.
it's all set out here.
Well, that level of detail shows up later, but it was honestly state legislation.
I'm okay with this.
There's no fee for the review of a conceptual plan. I think that just makes people's lives easier, honestly, to be able to come in and talk to the zoning administrator about what they're thinking of doing.
Can I go up to the public right-of-way thing before we get too far away from it? 152204. Bottom of that. So just to clarify, this is basically just that if you had a piece of land and there's a right of way through it, you can just say that's a new property line and I'm subdivided now.
This is if a public
right of way road, whatever.
This is actually a state law.
Okay.
But does this mean that the town council can make a subdivision of the public property?
The town could, yeah.
Without going through the process.
Right.
That doesn't make sense to me.
Yeah, I'm kind of
confused. Well, wait, a parcel of land divided by a public right of way, so it's a town road or a county road or a state road, is exempt from the subdivision plat requirements of this chapter. So the owner of real property may legally subdivide the property. Yeah, I don't. Somebody would have to interpret really this, right? It is state. Yeah, it's what the state law that. Says.
Okay.
Hmm.
Yeah, because it's also like, I mean, I'm assuming our regular like zoning and acreage requirements apply to that and stuff, but it feels a little like
made it law.
What so it says is should, exempt.
I know, but the town should actually follow its own laws. Sorry.
Yeah.
Can I give an example?
Sure.
Okay, so think about going through.
Wait, let's go.
Think about going through Bicknell over by Bryant's. And originally, the highway followed the rectangular streets and made a 90-degree intersection. At some point, the UDOT rounded out that curve. And Bryant's has that little triangle of land on the far side of Highway 24 that was cut off by a UDOT action. It probably doesn't meet the minimum lot size for the zoning. But what this is saying is if a public agency does something like that and runs a right-of-way and cuts off a corner of your land, you can separate that off from your
I see what you're saying.
So that little triangle can be its own lot.
Or he could say, yeah. And I think that's just a something to give that the state gave to people whose property was cut in two by eminent domain.
Huh.
That makes sense.
And then would that apply also to situations where, and maybe this doesn't make it a public right of way, but like if someone proved, that something had been used as a road for long enough?
Potentially it could have, yeah. If it's declared a public road, yeah.
Yeah, because that could be a little strange. But again, if it's state law, I guess you have to do it, but.
Yeah. But that's the kind of situations that this is addressing, is where.
And then does the town have to say, like, if in the example of that small triangular lot, do we just say, okay, you have that small weird lot, or does it have to be like a building lot? It's like you have this lot, so you can put a house on it.
I think what they're saying is,
it doesn't have to meet any of the requirements.
But
then what can you do with that
to be subdivided? Well, I don't. A good question, but it's something that's probably never going to happen.
Right.
But but state law does have that, give that little concession to someone whose property is involuntarily divided.
Yeah,
it does say the owner
just seems like
of real property may legally subdivide the property. At that point, it's subdivided, and yes, it seems like that's a lot that you
could do something
that you could build on. If it says that you can legally subdivide the property,
yeah,
could be.
Only as it is currently portrayed. So if it already is.
Yeah.
Interesting.
I think it's a really unlikely thing to happen, but I think you have bigger fish to fry here tonight.
Yeah.
Do we have to have it in our ordinance?
Until we get, yeah, do we have to have it in there?
I don't, I mean, this is one of the things that Katie put in. I don't,
oh, okay.
I don't, but see. Again, I didn't keep everything Katie put in.
Yeah, we could ask him and just take it out if we don't need it.
Yeah. I mean, it is, just in theory, it is a state law. So if we don't say something about it, you know, state law would apply.
Right.
You know, if somebody came along and said, I have the right to, you know, do this and I'm exempt from your requirements. So we could take it out. I don't feel very strong about it. So you can think about that. Okay. That's,
I guess, yeah. It's always weird with that state law stuff that like it kind of applies either way. So we kind of don't.
Unless you explicitly say it doesn't, so
that's true.
Okay, page 9. What's halfway through, and we're halfway through the hour, so maybe. So go ahead, scroll, Jessica. Now here, all right. So I did add that this showed up in state law, and I thought, you know, it's not a bad thing for us to have, but owners of water conveyance facilities should be notified if there's going to be a subdivision. So that's, again, it's within, it's in state law. Another notification here that, and this is sort of based on some of the current proposals that are coming in for subdivision, I think we should have a fourth, which would be the owners of property along private roads that provide access to the subdivision, because, you know, they're going to be the ones that we want to encourage to sign a road maintenance agreement. So, and they may not be within, you know, they may not be an adjacent property owner.
Right.
So I'm going to suggest we add a number 4 here that says owners of property along private roads that provide access to
or the shared easement or something like that.
Yeah.
Or the way it's written right now is within so many.
It's within 300 feet within our current code. And that pretty much picks up the adjacent property owners. Mm-hmm. But I know with the Deer Ranch proposal, it doesn't pick up the owners that between the subdivision and Lower Boulder Road, because they're more than 300 feet. So I think we ought to explicitly say that we notice those folks that are along the private road.
One question I have there is the notice, if we notify a lot of people, does that give people a false hope that they can, you know, run up the flag and stop this thing from happening when they can't?
We've sort of gone over all.
Yeah, we did. I mean, the first one up there kind of explicitly says that, seeking comments on existing easements and or property boundaries. So it doesn't say you can come in and squash the subdivision application. I mean, it's pretty clear.
And the rules have to hold a hard line on that. So I have a good boundary about that, of being like, you can comment on these things. You cannot comment on these other things.
And, you know, so the owners of property along the private road, in theory, they are going to be the ones that you're going to try to get their signature for the road maintenance agreement. I mean, you don't have to, and it's not going to stop the subdivision if you don't have it, but there are easement, you know, looking at something, ingress and egress, you know, there are questions of, you know, if you've got a private road and somebody doesn't really own part of that road, but they've got ingress and egress, do they have the right to pave it or to put gravel on it? And, you know, this is a complicated, it's going to be our big, a big brouhaha that comes up, I think, in a lot of these. Okay. So if you're okay with that, then I'll add in the owners of property along private roads. I will commit to making the changes that we're talking about here and flagging things that we haven't agreed to so that we can have the discussion on
with
October
the town
1st
council.
With the town council. All right, requirements for a preliminary subdivision application. So I've just tried to make a list here of all the things that you need when you put in an application. And Aaron needs to look at this, and this needs to be in the application form, you know, so, but it was just an attempt to try to organize. So Aaron's thankful for it, but it was in different places. So I took some of Caden's stuff and tried to put it all in one place so that it seemed more logical here. So that's
Aaron,
what
Aaron is raising her hand.
Aaron.
Nancy, you and I talked about those different directions that are in the current subdivision.
Yes.
About like how to lay out the documentation, and it occurred to me that those are directions to either the engineer or the surveyor for what they need to include on those documents. So I don't know if there is utility in bringing those back in. It you know, when after we talked, it's not necessarily something that I, you know, I'm basically just saying, is that information present? But it's really specific direction for the engineer, the surveyor.
So you're saying what is in our current code you think is more explicit than this?
Yes. Yeah, I guess.
So some of this, Aaron, if you look at some of this gets elaborated a bit more when you look at the development standards.
Okay.
Required improvements, like the water. So this just says you have to have water availability in this list, but later on it says you have to have 0.45 acre feet, and you have to have approval from Farmstead, and you have to do this and that. So
okay.
Later, it gets a little more explicit about what you have to do.
Okay.
Maybe this is, you know, silly to have it in two or three places, but.
Well, it's like the process summary that we did.
Right.
Correct.
It gets
so
high
I know
level
it becomes
and a little more.
Maybe a little redundant, but at least it's clear what people need to do, and it's in a, you know, it's like a summary. So I get why you did that.
So that's what's here.
Yeah.
I mean, and this, there's a couple of places that reference the Boulder Town Infrastructure Design Standards for the Fire Protection Plan, number 7, number 8, the Storm Drainage Plan. And again, these could be very precise and explicit, or they can be, you have to tell us how you're going to protect your house from fire.
Okay.
So I did make a distinction here between the preliminary subdivision application and the final subdivision application. And the main distinction, because we heard all this talk of, you know, is the preliminary the same as the final? The final requires that you put your improvement plan in place, that you have a road maintenance agreement as outlined in here, which within the subdivision is a requirement. Outside the subdivision, it's encouraged. And then you also have to show that you've all the taxes and everything else has been paid on the land. So this is somewhat arbitrary, but to me, it was all the other stuff. You know, the ALUA could go through it and say, yeah, you've got most of this in place. And then here's the things that are a little bit more complicated, taxes in it. I mean, they could do the taxes in the preliminary one, but the state, the law is sort of, it's like at the very end, you have to show that all the taxes have been paid. So I put it in the final application, but
The only thing that I don't care for is the road maintenance agreement, because it's so iffy. Like here, you're actually, it's like you're telling them that they have to have a road maintenance agreement, but we don't, we're not asking them to have one. We're just.
Well, we do. So under roads, we are saying, we'll get to it on page 15.
Right.
Within the subdivision, they have to have an agreement for all those lots, and that everyone who buys a lot will sign this agreement.
I see. Okay. Yeah.
Outside, so if it's on a private road running up to, they're encouraged to get everybody to sign it, but they don't have, they can't, if people don't sign it, they can't stop the subdivision. It's a contentious thing. And then the review of the final thing, I mean, this is basically my attempt to try to simplify what the state law said. You can do this four times. And this is where the number five, you know, if they don't, if they fail to respond within 40 business days, or 60 business days if the applicant has not responded within 40 days. Aaron's, the Alua is gonna, I did make Aaron in our zoning code, I think, is where I said that Aaron will be the convener of the Alua. So she's got sort of the authority to move the thing along. It's not gonna be the planning commission member or the consultant. And it's Aaron who, it's our ZA who keeps track of all this. Okay, so again, most of that, we've seen it before, it's in state code.
Yeah.
And infrastructure improvements. I mean, this is just, and the applicant has to certify that they've complied. I don't know why I have a highlight on final reporting there, because I think this language is pretty much what we've seen before.
Yeah.
All right. Design standards. I don't think I changed anything in here. I mean, this was all stuff we've reviewed before. Several references to the Boulder Town Infrastructure Design Standards. Subdivision improvement plans. And this was language that Michael added last time, about the town can maintain a road at the property owner's expense. I did add to ensure public safety access. I mean, that's the main reason that it's been done. Okay, let's move on. Anybody have any questions with any of that? So open space. So here's our lot size averaging. And I tried to clean it up because, you know, we've gone around and around on this. I don't think it says 3 years in here. Well, it was, you can't do it until 3 years later. I thought I'd do it again. But I think what I put in here, you can only do this once.
You can only do it once.
Yeah. So it has to be done, and phased development doesn't apply. So if you're going to do a lot size averaging, you're going to make your whole plan for your parcel.
That is a change. That makes sense.
I mean, it seemed easier, honestly. And then this is where I put a development agreement in here.
So this would be the option for what we already have for lot size averaging. This, we would use this one instead.
This is just trying to clean up what we already have in our zone.
And I think that we should, I'm okay with this too. And I think that this is something that we should talk about with the town council at the joint meeting.
Right.
I'm okay with this.
And so with lot size averaging, the incentive basically is you get one extra lot, right? Because you can reserve something and then you divide by five and you get to create, you know, other smaller lots. And you get one extra one.
What's the logic to limiting this to one time only use?
Ease of managing it and figuring it out, implementing it.
So if I had, I guess I'm that confuses me, because if I have 80 acres, I can't carve off a couple chunks for kids and then later decide, well, I'm going to put in 10 lots for actual housing and make a more traditional subdivision and use the. So I guess if I can only do it once, then I have to figure out.
And
I have to put in a really, really expensive fire hydrant line, and just to do it, like, so maybe I likely don't have $100,000 sitting around to put in an 8-inch pipe down there. So I don't know if that seemed very different than what we discussed with what's his name? With Lee.
Yeah.
So that seemed to break. Maybe I'm worried that could prevent it from being implemented. That rule.
Yeah, I don't necessarily like the one and done thing either, but I'm not sure what the right. I don't right now have what I think is the right alternative, but I don't necessarily. Well, I thought that's what we did talk to Lee about, was that it was just a one and done thing, and it was an incentive for somebody that had property that they could create one lot, you know, out of that for somebody that, you know, as far as the making it less expensive for people to buy, but not to create all these single lots, but that somebody that it would, I thought when we talked to Lee, it was for one time. I
thought we settled on something else, but
I can't remember what it was. I'm trying to see if I can find it somewhere. I feel like we have the same discussion.
Yeah.
What if we determine?
Yeah. I think that's the whole thing, is I don't know that we ever determined it. I think it.
Yeah, and we needed it to be workable.
Yeah.
I mean, that was the sort of dilemma of how do you actually implement this in a way that makes sense, but we'll see if it's good to the end.
Original language.
Yeah, where is that?
No. Phased. So we had phased lot size average.
Yeah.
And we took out phased development from earlier in the subdivision code.
This would have been like a year ago.
Yeah.
Yeah.
A good year
that,
ago.
Yeah. When we passed it.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
But if you try reading ordinance, it was in January that it was passed.
Right.
I think it was 2024-1. No, well, it may have been, because it's a because it's
there again. I think it's something that we should talk about at the joint meeting, as far as what people really want.
I will say, I mean, it's really complicated.
Yes,
and
it is.
It's hard to talk about it in If you read ordinance 2024-1, which is what it where it was,
right.
I struggled with it.
So is this what you're doing is this what you're trying to do basically instead of that?
So I put the lot size averaging back in here as clear as I could write it, but again, it does have some changes in it from what was said previously. The next section is what I was throwing out there as a suggestion because I discovered a town that uses this rural preservation subdivision, which actually gives you more lots.
I think what we maybe did, I'm reading it now, and I think what we did is said that basically, this thing here says the basis for the lot size average calculation shall be the total area of the parcel or lot being divided as of, right here it says January 4th, 2024. But basically, it's like when you start, you determine the number of lots you can have, and you don't necessarily have to build them all at once, but you don't get to like later, if things change or zoning changes or you have a different number of acres, you don't get to like change that number. If that makes sense. Like it's sort of like when you first engage with lot size averaging, you're given a number. And then over time you can
That's right. And the problem with the old code is we had someone come in thinking they would use it, but they were going to change the boundary of the parcel. And it wouldn't have been in effect on January 4th, 2024. So this is why our old code doesn't work because you know, somebody, so we said, but in here, it's as of the application.
Right.
So we changed that.
When you say in here, what do you?
In our new, what we're reading right now.
What were, okay.
Subdivision code. Basically, where does it say that? It should show the process as of the date, based on one lot per 5 acres within the subdivision boundary existing on the date of the application. So we fixed that issue with January 4th.
And it wouldn't necessarily need to be a when done thing then?
Yeah, not necessarily.
Yeah, I like that better.
And then maybe we just say even more explicitly that it's like, that's your number. So like if you're, if you did it right now, and then your grandkid one day wants to do it again, he has to go by your number the first time you ever use average lot sizing.
Yeah.
Right. I think that would make sense. I think that's what
if it's not clear enough,
everybody can just keep doing it.
But it
does help. Some people, it gives us a start. It gave us an option. I mean, lot size averaging gave us another option for people with smaller incomes. That's, I always forget how.
Attainable.
Whatever. That's what this all came out of, was lot size averaging, was to create more housing for, not so that a big developer could have more smaller lots and sell them.
Right.
But hopefully, you know, so that, yeah.
So maybe we need to, under the process, so the subdivision application, this is number 4 under the process in our current code.
Yeah.
Shall show the process used to calculate the number of building lots, da, da, da. Number 5 should be the number of lots shall be fixed for any future, you know, development on property.
Yeah, something like that.
Okay. And then if somebody, so I took out the phase stuff, but if somebody wants to do that, you know, they can propose it. You know, LUA can decide whether, I mean, there were some things where it seemed like being more explicit was worse. I mean, that, you know, there are times when you want to let things go on. Okay. I don't want to belabor this, but I would love for you to read the rural preservation subdivision here. We don't have to put this in our code, but I found a town that uses this. I talked to their planner. He said it's been used 6 or 7 times. It actually gives you more lots because it creates, there's a little table down there, depending on how much of your parcel you're going to put in open space and how close you are to infrastructure. So if you've got, you know, sort of a big parcel and it's on a public road and you decide you want to keep the back half of it, 50% of it, and you're on the road, the lots you put there would be within 100 feet of the water and electricity, you can multiply by 1.75 the number of lots you'd be allowed. And so I did a calculation somewhere, and you know, if you've got 20 acres and you keep 10 acres, you could end up having 6 acres on the property, or 6 lots on the property. I mean, it's more. There's an incentive here that gives you
which
more.
We did talk about with the average lot size too.
Right. I forget what Lee was calling it, but yeah.
Yeah.
Right.
So this is
the incentive.
This is the incentive. I mean, it gives you, you know, if you've got more than 20, and I just put in if you've got more than 20 acres, because you don't want to do this, it's sort of not worth it to do it unless then you want to keep enough acreage in more than 6 acre parcels in green space so that you've got, you know, that benefit, that tax benefit. So anyway, we could put it in here and, you know, somebody could try to do it, or we can just ignore it and not worry about it. So
my initial reaction to this when I read it earlier is I like it. I wonder if it makes sense for us to try to like pass this subdivision code without it and go back to it in the winter or the spring, just because I feel like it's its whole own thing and it's kind of new right at the finish line here. And when we talked to Lee about this stuff, we really thought it all. I don't know. It would feel a little rushed to me to like introduce this now. And I think the subdivision code would be okay without it for a while. And then I'd love to revisit it and maybe add it in.
It just, to me, what I liked, I mean, the town is called Nibley City.
Nibley, yeah. I've gotten pigs there.
You've got the drinks there?
I got a pig guy in Nibley.
Yeah, and they're trying to preserve the rural character. It's a different kind of town, and a lot of the open space that they preserve ends up becoming nature preserves and town parks and so on, because it's a different community. But I really enjoyed talking to the guy, and I thought, you know, they've put a lot of thought into, you know, how they did this. They didn't. So I added this thing of proximity to infrastructure, because to me, that's, you know, they don't have that. And I thought, you know, this is something that makes a difference here. I mean, if we've got, you know, and I did go to the Farmstead, both there, the Farmstead water meeting the other night. And they were talking about, you know, put your lots on the main line. It's going to be a whole lot less expensive to build. So, and that's what this does. That's what this says. You've got an incentive if you're close to infrastructure. So we can take it out.
Well, and I think what Elena said is right too. I think that we should maybe, especially when we have our meeting next month, you know, have the town council look at this too, so that if they, you know, like we can either do it now or leave it as an option to where we could do it right afterwards or add to it. Or
I mean, you know, my thought on it, so when I put it, I thought, well, and we put a space saver here for planned unit developments. These are 3 options for doing things a little differently.
Yeah.
And, you know, that nobody has to use them, but if somebody wanted to try to do it, we could see how it worked.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, anyway. We should also probably just go back to looking at maybe zoning.
That whole zone.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay, so we just talked all our way through this. It is a little bit after 9 o'clock.
Fancy Europe problem.
So I will tweak the things that we talked about, flag the things that I think And I will send this back out to you to just take a look. I mean, we can't have an online meeting, but just for you to make sure that I captured what we said we wanted to capture, and then we'll get it to the town council by October 1st for our joint discussion,
which is on
October 1st. Yes, we will get it to the town council a week before October 1st. When is that? Like next week or something?
Yeah.
Okay. Does that make sense?
Discussion. I'm hoping that discussion is.
I'd really like to get their input so that if we need to make substantive changes, we do it before we have a public hearing.
Yeah.
Okay. So I sort of just reviewed the meeting actions. We've got a zoning code that's going to go to town council. We've got the steps we said.
Yeah.
I know Lacey doesn't like it when I said, okay, we did all these things. That's fine. You know, we took action. When I do this step, review the meeting actions. We made some decisions on the zoning code. We're going to review it, get it to the town council for their next meeting. We're going to have a joint meeting with them based on the changes we've made in this code. And hopefully we have a robust discussion.
Yeah.
Upcoming business. Now, John, I was going to put you here because to talk, but it's after 9 and I have people here who want to leave at 9. So how about you distribute?
Well,
no, it's not ready.
No explanation would be nothing.
I agree.
How long?
I think right here in 15 minutes.
Oh, I thought you were going to say like 3.
So I'm just going to summarize for in terms of upcoming business. This is for John's benefit and then for you all too. I think the Boulder Town Infrastructure Design Guidelines, and we really need an acronym that we can pronounce for that, covers 7 things according to what we've documented in here. Covers roads, subdivision improvement plan, development agreement, fire protection plan, storm drainage plan, road maintenance agreement, and easements. And some of these will be explicit standards, like an easement has to be 40 feet and a road has to have this much gravel. The others will be a template or a list, a checklist of this is what you have to have in a subdivision improvement plan. That's the way I'm thinking about our design guidelines. So does that fit with?
Yes, I think your expectations are higher than mine, but
that's always the case, actually. So
we'll work together.
Okay, that sounds good.
We'll have to do it after the joint meeting. There's going to be plenty on the joint meetings there.
Yeah, and I don't want to make, given the town council has agreed to have 2 meetings that week, I don't want us to spend a whole lot of time on lots of things. This is the most important thing because we're going to do this being the subdivision code because we're going to do a public hearing on it. Okay, so
can this be passed without the standards?
Yeah, we're
meeting. No, so it can't, but we're going October 17th. We will have a public hearing and an in-depth discussion, hopefully, on the standards and whatever occurred in the public hearing so that we try to make our changes to this so that it goes to the town council for their November meeting. I mean, that's the intent. And the standards, John, maybe you and I can do a little bit of work on them and we can get a draft out because I think it would be really good to have something out before our meeting on October 17th.
Given that at the service meeting, there were several questions about the standards. Maybe, those
who John, you should come up to the microphone.
I'm sorry to keep you up there.
I think I could have probably gotten halfway through the standards in the time we've been talking about it right now.
Yeah.
If somebody has to leave, there's going to be no action. It's really information only, but I think it probably would be helpful for anyone who could stick around for a few more minutes to just go through the presentation tonight, just to get a feeling, because this, nobody knows what the document looks like.
Yeah.
But if I were to distribute the draft right now, we'd have nothing but confusion because it's still very preliminary.
Okay.
Yeah,
2, 3, go.
Could you bring that up, the document up
here? Yes, sir. I mean, I've been waiting to see this. I feel like we've been waiting. And
yeah.
You've been sitting on the edge.
All right, very good. You got it up there. Thank you, Jessica. What I wanted to clarify, just a disclaimer, I'm still a licensed professional engineer, but I'm acting as a citizen volunteer for the town. The purpose of these standards is to establish objective criteria to protect legitimate municipal interests and give the ALUA some guidance on what can be considered approvable. I'm not certifying that these standards are suitable or adequate as construction design for any specific project. And I've tried to base it on adapting existing codes, prepends, and just really emphasize that. Don't write a new code. You just cite what's already there. And I've tried to stick with that as much as possible, with the only big exception being trying to make sure we don't adopt by reference something that really we don't want in Boulder. Standard documents like this are quite common, and this one, you can go down to the table of contents, Jessica. The ones I've looked at range from about 40 pages to several hundred pages. I think I've even seen them up about 400 pages. The key is that these are advisory. They're less formal than the ordinances because you don't want to have to go through two public hearings and a formal ordinance change to just change a few dimensions on a drawing. So I've organized it along the topics, and as of tonight, as I said, this is very preliminary. Nancy and I were passing this back and forth, and she said, well, you should add this. So, okay, I'll add another section.
This is different than the one that you gave us.
It's evolved. It has evolved from me. So you'll start seeing familiar pages here.
Yeah.
So as Nancy said, you know, it's organized. First section, like we can just go right down to it. It's 21 pages, so I'm going to try to spend less than a minute on a page.
I do think, John, it would be helpful to organize it by these categories that we are asking people to refer to. So, you know, development agreement or subdivision improvement plan. Those would be the titles.
Yes. So the first one here is your...
Let me go down.
Yeah.
Subdivision applications and development plans. And here we're going to need some very heavy input from Eric as far as.
But I don't think that needs to be in our design
scheme. Nancy, if you want me to get through this quickly.
Yeah. Because it's in the ordinance.
Oh, okay. Let me back that up a little on the preamble. The two documents are very complementary. Nothing in these design standards can really stand alone. It needs to be tied to a requirement in the ordinance. But you don't want to put into the ordinance very detailed things like the application form, the checklists, because those need to be living documents that can be updated readily. So the two are complementary, that the ordinance has to state the basis for the provision. The design guidelines expand it.
I just stopped. You just tell me where to go.
Yeah, okay.
I can go back up.
Keep on going.
Just keep on scrolling.
Scroll down to about page 7. Okay. So here, and again, this is where I need input from the ZA. How documents should be submitted, guidance on things like maximum file size. 100 megabyte file is probably going to be unmanageable. This is the place to put that. The ordinance says you have to submit a preliminary application. This says things about how you submit it, and I really do need Aaron's help on that part. I have highlighted things that need policy discussions, and development plans are probably the big is one where I do need input from you people. As far as the right now, what we have facilitates do-it-yourself subdivisions, but we've really never had a discussion about beyond the fact that we don't want the roads that look like St. George. We've never really had a discussion about what type of subdivision features we want to avoid. So I have not tried to write that, but I've put in some things that these standards as they're currently written certainly aren't applicable to a large subdivision. They're not applicable to subdivisions that require engineered infrastructure for floodplains or natural hazards. So that will have to come later. And I think this is true of a lot of this, that we need to get the main ordinance through and then come back and revisit it.
John, we do not use the term development plan in our ordinance. So I would call it a subdivision improvement plan. I want some consistency
here. Certainly, thank you. Although this is kind of feedback. So subdivision improvement plan, which is different than a development agreement also.
Right. And these are infrastructure design guidelines. Right. So the whole application thing, I don't see that being in these design. This is how you design a subdivision.
So if we don't need it, we can take it out. But I think is a place we can have a placeholder if we want to put some guidance on how documents are submitted and what we want expect to have on the documents. This is the appropriate place to put that.
I think we probably call it something different than infrastructure design guidance, which is what we agreed to previously. So.
Okay, so this one we've seen before.
Yep.
A drawing giving a road that you, and the wording is always that if your engineer comes up with something different and a professional engineer is willing to sign off on it, the town will presume that's adequate. But if you don't have anything, this is the floor. You say, well, at least if it meets this, the GA can say, or the ALUA can say, yep, we'll presume that's acceptable. Next one is the we've seen before the subdivision turnarounds. That should be very familiar. I'll keep on going. Keep on going here to go over to the going next page. This intersection of a private road with a town road. This is addressing the curve radius, the slope change at the top at the road intersection, the stop sign. And the sight lines. Keep on going. Okay, so I've got proposed maintenance of private road, subdivision roads. I think the wording is going to be basically the emergency vehicle access, sheriff, ambulance, and fire truck. That the town can maintain to that standard if the access is not there. One Nancy and I have already agreed to disagree on is, do we give a seasonal waiver for unoccupied buildings? Summit County has lots of mountain homes up at, they're not plowed in winter. It doesn't really make sense to say that you have an all-weather road if it's got 6 feet of snow on it. But somebody has to understand if you build under a circumstance like that and there's a fire, your place is going to burn. We can discuss, those are the things that can be discussed. Keep on going. Okay. Fire protection plan. So here is a case where I think that the writing in green really should be in the ordinance to make it very clear that the written approval from the town fire authority is a required document that's got to be included with the application.
That
green wording, we just have to make sure we are consistent between the two. Now we get into more detail, which codes apply. Although these codes are also adopted in our ordinance by reference. We're really state. The issue here, quite frankly, is that Pete Benson is a wonderful, wonderful person and very experienced, but we're all finite people. You know, we don't want to have it totally dependent on his what's in his head. We need, and I need to work with him to make sure we get down in writing so that the next person would be following the same sort of standards in the future. And also that an applicant doesn't have to play guessing games of what would be required. So we need to name the codes. Water supply is controversial. And what I really am going to recommend at October 1 is that subsequent to this process, we have a meeting with the state fire marshal who's offered to come to Boulder, the county fire marshal who's already been here, our fire department, Boulder Farmstead, and get people in and have a community meeting where we have all these experts to really weigh in on what is necessary and appropriate and important. Because we do have different opinions. Let me backtrack a little bit to something. You don't have to scroll back, but these standards, I guarantee, will not be perfect. I'm very fallible. What I'm going to propose in the adoption ordinance is that these standards have a sunset date. We try them for a year. That gives us a deadline that in a year, either the town council has to readopt them or we have to amend them. But it says, but recognize that people, that these aren't intended to be forever. We're going to learn as we try to apply them. I found that as we've learned with the lot averaging, you don't get really good comment from the landowners until somebody actually tries to do it and says, hey, this doesn't make sense. So I'm sure the first time somebody tries to apply these standards, we're going to get feedback that I've not been able to pull out of people. Okay, so fire protection plan, we do have to get some expertise on how appropriate is water, for example, compared to fire breaks, or the other things that are in the wildland interface code, like roofing materials, fire-resistant construction, defensible space around houses. I think we'll find a lot of expert opinions is that that's a lot more important than how many gallons of water you've got available. Okay, other development infrastructure. Okay, clarify here, for example, that showing a photocopy of a check to Boulder Farmstead isn't sufficient. They have to approve it. And I think in our discussion last night, or the Boulder Farmstead meeting, I realized this letter has to have a definite time duration, because this is a good example of something that would happen after preliminary approval, but before final reporting. That if you're going to have to extend a 10-inch water line, that's got to go to Jones and DeMille for engineering. Boulder Farmstead is going to have to bid out the work. And the construction is going to have to take place. It's going to be easily a year, probably 2 years, between the preliminary approval and the time somebody's actually going to have a hydrant installed. So the Boulder Farmstead commitment can't just expire in 6 months. We'll learn a lot more about that. Sanitation, we basically say have to get approval from Southwest Public Health, that we allow off-grid solar power, that Boulder has no requirements for phone or internet. So, these are very minimal requirements compared to most towns, but seem to be consistent with what we're happy with. Then I go into irrigation infrastructure. I've talked to Kenny Coleman about that. Mostly that we need to alert people that existing irrigation structures are often private property rights that aren't accurately mapped. And there's, we've run into this multiple times of people saying, well, I think the pipeline's there, and having going out water witching trying to find it. Agricultural preservation, I included that if you're claiming credits for agricultural space, you have to include the transfer of water rights. That again probably should be in the ordinance, not here. But then things like location of all known irrigation infrastructure should be shown on the subdivision plat. that you need to get written approval of the owner if you're altering anything, doing subdivision work that's altering some existing irrigation infrastructure. I don't think it'd be hard to require it, but I think good practice would be that that we encourage people to indicate a easement for some pipe for irrigation maintenance along existing canals and pipelines. They probably could assert it by historic use, but why not just say, let's agree up front to show it. All right, next one, stormwater drainage. So the way I wrote this, I based it on the stormwater runoff requirements in the state code. That's so, which kick in when you're disturbing more than an acre. So it's not a lot size of 1 acre, it's a disturbed area. If you do a quick calculation, a normal lot is going to disturb a building, a house with a driveway is going to disturb less than a quarter of an acre. So it's in effect saying that you probably need a drainage plan when you start exceeding 4 lots. Unless you have unusually large buildings or large long rows. And it's giving some default guidelines for culverts. So if somebody is not doing detailed engineering and runoff calculations, 18 inches for if you're handling only on-site rainwater, 24 inches if you're handling off-site, adequate cover over the culverts. So if somebody says that they're going to follow these design guidelines, the LULA can say, yep, you've got an acceptable drainage plan. Floodplains and wetlands. I put it in here as a placeholder mainly because we do not have floodplain mapping for Boulder Town at this time, nor do we have jurisdictional wetland designations. The best we have is the map that the Utah Geological Survey has done for Boulder. It's an interactive map. You can zoom into an incredible level of detail. And that's the best indication we have. So although our ordinance talks about not building in wetlands, this is the best reference we've got to what where wetlands actually are. Continuing down, sensitive lands, I've put us a heading reserve because we actually have pretty extensive detail in the hills. Sensitive lands, Mesa Top and Hillside Protection or Overlay District, natural hazards also reserved. Then I put in some quantitative engineering criteria because if an engineer is hired to design something, their first question is, okay, what criteria do I have to meet? So I put in a few things like reference to the Garfield County local site-specific data table, the rainfall data from NOAA for design storms, and let's see if there's else we and then a little bit about traffic design. So that's about where it is now.
I like it.
Since I printed this one out, I've made about 2 dozen corrections. So that's why I say it is definitely a work in progress.
I like it.
It's a lot of work. Thank you.
Yeah. Yes. It's amazing job. I mean, I see what you're saying is as far as it being a separate document, but I think this would answer a lot of people's questions instead of asking all these questions that people might have. You just hand them this document, and I think it fills in a lot of the spaces.
Yeah, and I'm sure as we get questions, I'm going to have to fill in
more. It's not a primer necessarily, but well, yeah, I think
it's intended to be guidelines.
So right.
That's what we called it.
Exactly.
How do you meet the code requirements?
Exactly. You've done a great job. Yeah.
So it's not a mystery, but you can see why handing this out and saying we'll comment on it without the context of it's preliminary, and the intent is really to help the do-it-yourself subdivider who doesn't want to hire an engineer to come up with something in the LULA and say, yep, that's reasonable.
Yeah. The thing is are we trying to make a decision on this to before December 24th? This will go along with the subdivision.
It has to be adopted. Because,
yeah.
So, I mean, John, what I would find helpful would be to read the subdivision code and You know, I listed the seven things that we say this an application has to comply with these guidelines.
And yeah,
I'd like to see the sections being
okay.
You know, roads.
Yeah. Oh, I see what
sort
you're
of
saying.
Organized based yes. on someone who says, "All right, wait a minute. It says I have to comply with these guidelines. What page do I look at? Do I find the guidelines for the fire protection plan? Where do I find the guidelines yeah. for
Is
the subdivision improvement plan?" So it's a little more tied. And we did put the application checklist in here. We were explicit about that. We didn't say what size the file has to be. We said it has to be submitted electronically, okay. But I think there's a lot of it in our code already. Whether it belongs in here or we put it in, you know, guidelines. I mean, I would take out the title infrastructure design guidelines if we were going to put a whole bunch of stuff about how to fill out your application. Because that to me is different than infrastructure guide design.
It's a good point. That's amazing.
Yeah. Anyway, that's a lot of work. I see that.
Thank you, John,
for doing all of that.
Yeah,
but we just have to align them so that, you know.
And now in this context, if you know that you understand the context, I have no problem distributing this draft, or maybe let me run it through the word processor one more time to get nice feedback, and then I'd like to get shared with it, not just among yourself, but shared with anyone, you know, your friends, your neighbors.
But organize it based on what we're putting in the ordinance, rather than, you know, it wasn't just, maybe I'm being too anal about it, but I think it would be easier for someone to follow it to say, wait, where do I find the guidelines for the storm drainage plan? It's on page 15.
Yeah, let's talk offline on that, because I did start with your own. I think I'm close to it. Let's talk offline. I think we're gonna...
Okay. All right. So
thank you,
we will come in.
Thank you.
Thank you. And thank you all for sitting here a little bit longer to hear his presentation. We will try to get something in a draft form out maybe before the meeting on the 1st, but before our next October 17th meeting. Okay.
Yeah. Well, it would be great if the town council could see. I don't know if you can do it or even what you have. At the
well,
beginning.
They will see it.
Yeah. 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 That's great.
Can I move to adjourn the meeting?
Do we have final public comment? Anybody? Sorry. Ashley doesn't. Jen Bob, Judy, Jen, you're the only two online up there. Any public comment? Okay. We'll take that as a go. Go for it, Jean.
Like to adjourn the meeting, make a motion to adjourn the meeting.
Seconded.
All those in favor?
Aye.
That was great.
Anybody opposed?
I the same meeting adjourned at 9:32.
Meeting adjourned at 9:30 p.m.
Great. Thank you.
Yeah, that was great.